If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, ghouls and goblins, welcome to Weird Things, the podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people. That's an accent of indeterminate origin, so it is.
Giddy up.
Am I Australian or perhaps Cockney? Maybe New Zealand, eh?
Sheep. I was watching Zulu Dawn. Maybe it could be Afrikaner.
Oh, yeah. You know, South Africa has one of those weird, the only thing I know to say is diplomatic immunity. That's the only way I know the South African.
It's not really an accent, Brian. That's just kind of like you, like, lowering your voice.
Yeah. Here, speaking out of turn, here is Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hi.
We call him the All accent right. police.
So there you go. So we've got some weird stuff today. First thing is, like, this is an auction that came up on eBay, and I saw the headline, and I'm like, this sounds interesting. And then I'm like, this could be a good book, the entire topic of what this is. And something came up for sale on eBay, and the buy-it-now price was $149.95.
I know this. It's a 1982 full cabinet of Kangaroo, the one where the kangaroo boxes.
Fine. Next topic. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for ruining it.
Damn it. Time Pilot 84? It was Time Pilot 84, wasn't it?
No, was it 99 Luft balloons?
That's right, for $140. Buy them
sunk
now.
By who? Who?
Nina.
Good enough.
So, okay, yeah.
Nina Simone.
I wouldn't be able to tell you the rest of that. No, no, no. All wrong. All wrong. So this came up for sale. There's some question about the legality of this going up for sale. And the problem is that in the wrong hands.
Is it a human organ?
No, you're not allowed to sell those on eBay, which I found out had to shut down like 20 auctions.
No, wait a minute. So you can't do you can't sell your desiccated finger, finger in an industrial.
No, you can't do that. You can't sell like souls. They took all the fun out.
You can't sell a soul? To your shoe? Like a rubber soul?
Maybe there. You're like, oh, well, this is the soul of my shoe. Also, it contains my immortal being.
It's like essence.
It's like when you can't sell tickets on eBay, so you sell like a hat, like an Indianapolis Colts hat.
Just
that
to make it clear,
Super Bowl tickets.
To make it clear, you are purchasing this rubberized piece of a footwear. Also, since we're friends, my gift to you is my immortal essence, transferable upon payment.
No, sadly, no. So we're going to narrow things down here. I could be holding on to the item inside my hand here.
A small mouse.
And we're sure it's not a soul.
That sings Suspicious Minds.
Are we sure it's not a small mouse?
We're pretty sure it's not a small mouse, especially
what would it sound like, though, if it was a small mouse?
Oh, I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what a small mouse singing Suspicious Minds would sound like?
So what I'm containing in my hands, this would be pretty awesome. And in if Brian had this particularly, it would be like extremely useful for Brian.
A deck of cards. Is it a deck of cards?
No.
For $140? Maybe some kind of magic or cheating gizmo. Maybe.
Very close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not directly, but could be used for that.
Wow. Maybe an EMP device or something? Maybe some kind of electrical discharge? Like a taser?
No, I'm thinking it's older school than that. Like it's some sort of like something an ancient evil, Brian.
Not quite. It's old school.
Now, he says it could be used for evil, so I'm thinking something more morally ambiguous, like a lockpick set, or maybe like phrenology calipers.
or a rape kit, but not a kit used to determine rape, but rather those to exact it.
You ready for this?
I think it was originally marketed as the Revengeinator in 1906.
Did you ever read the Jim Swain book, The Man Who Walked Through Walls?
No, I did not. What was it about?
It's about this the grandnephew of Houdini tracking down this legacy of Houdini, something that Houdini had created and left behind. And what it was in this case, and this is not what this is, but this relates, was that the idea that Houdini had made this mythical super lockpicking set that fit into a belt that could have every lockpick you could need, whatever, just look like you have your belt on and you could slide through and just quickly open up all these doors. A locksmith is selling what is called an all-access pass to New York City. Retired New Jersey locksmith Daniel Ferraris is hawking what he calls a fireman's key ring. Okay?
Get out of
it's town. Got, it will open up the electrical panels, all the fire elevators, the traffic lights, the service keys, the fire alarm box sets.
Wait, this is a, subway this is a thing? Keys. This is amazing. The override capability for every elevator?
Going to subways.
He's basically selling. Is this a collection? Like, I mean, like, are these things issued to fire departments?
Firemen in New York City, in big cities, they have these municipal key sets to allow them to get into all sorts of places. You know, when there's a fire in a subway, you know, like, we don't, oh, get call the guy up, have him let us in. Or, right, oh, right. We got him into the skyscraper. We got him there. They have keys that give them access to these things. Ever go into an elevator and see that little red round keyhole?
Yeah. That's so like, because like when the smoke alarms go off, the elevator shut down, that's like full on override. That's like, take me mm-hmm. where I want to go.
I'm also uncomfortable with the term red round keyhole.
What would be a more legally appropriate iteration if you were to, you know, tell us?
The keys include the all-purpose 1620. Care to guess what the 1620 key does?
It gets you into room 1620, the champagne room at the top of the Chrysler building.
It gets you into girls age 16 to 20.
If I gets you into it, means just makes you a fan of them. You know, like, you're just into them.
No,
you
would never, just really
you
like,
never actually date one, but just.
Yeah, you know. I like Victoria Justice as well.
Use the 1620 key in a skyscraper in any one of the big buildings across the city. Turn that key, and you ever see, like, in the ground floor, the elevators where they have there's the fire, there's the, you know, outside of the elevator, there's the keyhole. You put that little 1620 in there, it sends all of the elevator carriages to the lobby.
Dude, that's amazing. This is for $140?
$149.95.
And that's the buy it now price? Hold on. EBAY.
So how illegal is this, if at all?
I think using it would probably be a felony. Possession of it, I don't know.
Wow.
So I mean, that, like, keys,
Is this a bit of a scandal that it's out there? Like, I mean,
no,
like, is
totally
this one
not
of those...
a scandal. Everybody's happy about this. The city's like, hooray, great. We're glad to see somebody's making money in this economy. Of course it's a scandal.
Well, no, here's what element of the scandal I'm specifically asking about. Like, is this one of those things where you are a turncoat for not, like, turning this over to the next generation of firemen? Like, is this something that's passed down, you know, from...
They
like,
have... The, no, no. I mean, they already have these keys. If somebody's made a copy or whatever set of these keys.
Okay.
It's not New York City won't be able to access an elevator or be able to do this if somebody buys this on eBay.
No.
Not a magical genie.
So No. I just mean, like, in terms of, like, is there a personally shamed fireman? That's what I'm looking for.
No, not that they're aware of.
Is somebody like is somebody the masked fireman, like the masked magician? Like, he's just like, screw it, you guys. I'm making money my own way, selling these keys.
No, it's a locksmith who's made these.
I'm actually trying to find it on eBay right now. I don't know what would one search for hypothetically if one wanted to learn more about these alleged keys. Were they actually available on a site called eBay if that site existed?
Fireman's key ring.
All right. Fireman's key ring. How did you run across this?
Brian, we don't need to get into my motives or my methods.
All right. Oh, unfortunately, it's coming back with zero results on eBay.
And if you hear a jingling sound, totally unrelated.
Really?
No.
Oh, here it is right here. There's the story on fireengineering.com. Fireman's key ring sold on eBay worries NYC officials. So it almost certainly got taken down. I mean, now it's going to be called like...
No, it said it's sold.
The flame pillows. I guess so.
It said it's sold.
Yeah, sold to the undercover
reporter. Yeah, to a post office box in Guantanamo.
Oh, man, that's amazing. Wow.
So, like... What, I mean, is there anything that the city can do about it? Like, it's just that now it's like just out there, right?
I don't, you know, unless they pass some sort of law, I don't think that it's illegal.
Whoa. To own these keys. New York City passing a crazy law that affects, you know, just a few people.
You can't buy a Big Gulp, but you can own a key that can shut down the Empire State Building elevators. Totally,
I mean, it doesn't
sense.
Seem like it should be a crime to have the key. I mean, using key, sure.
That would be the best key in New York. Gulp. Like the key that like unlocks the extra donuts or like continues the machine so it pours more than like 16 ounces.
It's like, I don't know. It's like finding out you got the key to all the vending machines or, you know, when I was a kid and I was thinking like my survival strategy is if I ran away, I'd be like, I'd figure out how to pick vending machines. That's how I'd survive on a diet of Mountain Dew and Twinkies.
I like how it's that instead of hunting. It's like, no hunting and trapping and living off the land. Like, I'm going to live on
Funyuns. In the suburb. What am I going to hunt? Raccoons?
I don't know. You live in the suburbs of, like, Oregon.
I'm down here. I mean, suburbs of, you know, Florida. I'm going to eat raccoon and possum when there's these perfectly good vending machines. I could be picking the barrel locks with my big pin.
You could be fishing.
If that was how you picked
fishing
them.
In Florida. You go live off the you know, the nature's ocean's fruit.
You're the guy that wasn't sure if the internet would be gone if we had a total apocalypse.
What does this have to do with food eating? Have you ran away?
I still get Wi-Fi. Things? A serious 10-minute staring incident of me just looking at him going,
was that on a real podcast or was that on one of the
we're like McDonald's or something like that, and I was trying to wrap my head around the idea that you thought we'd still have like internet if like power systems and everything.
No, that was during a podcast. That was during a Weird Things podcast,
maybe.
I feel like there was, because I think that was like the first one that we did that we never released, and also that was the same one where we did the what would be your moral obligation if you were selling a house and you, in fact, believed it to be haunted.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what was your moral obligation to tell?
I remember listening to the first episode of Weird Things. Release the Kraken, it was called. And it was about you guys going down, like, what, Tony Stark style inside a submarine and then running into a giant sea creature in the bottom of the depths.
Well, I don't think we ever did one without you.
No, yeah,
I think you were on the first one.
No. First one was definitely, because I remember listening to it and thinking, man, this is so awesome. I wish I could be on this. And then
I think we sent you the one that we never released.
What?
Yeah, I don't think we ever did one without you.
Man,
like, of those released.
I'm going to have to, now I'm tempted to check it out. I got to go see. Crazy.
All right.
You want to know what? Yeah. I'll tell you, I got an ad for you guys.
What?
Yeah. Antagonist Movement Incorporated, Rich Boy Cries for Mama is the new ebook about the Washington, D.C. punk scene from the 80s and 90s with lyrics quoted from over 20 punk legends of the time. It's a true story written by Ethan H. Minsky. So check it out. Rich Boy Cries for Mama, the brand new ebook. Google it, by the Antagonist Movement Incorporated. I'm sure they got some cool stuff on, like, the Bad Brains and stuff like that. Should be a cool book.
That is an exciting thing that we're getting into now with digital publishing, because if you wanted to sell a book like that, traditional publisher, it could happen, but it could take years and years to get that. And then they might do a limited run of a couple thousand copies through some, you know, put it in Amoeba and some other places. And if it doesn't catch on, the book is gone and you might never even know it exists. But now this thing can be around forever. But if you're into that, you get it now and you encourage that, and you can have this micro publishing for a niche. Great idea.
Hell yeah, man. So big ups to that. And of course, thank you to the Antagonist Movement for supporting the Weird Things podcast. If you would like to do the same, head on over to weirdthings.com/sponsor and throw your $30 our way. I'll read whatever you got to talk about, be it just a message to the Weird Things audience at large or a project that you want them to know about. So check it out, weirdthings.com/sponsor.
And he will read it. He's totally like Anchorman. He just has no idea what's in front of him.
Even when he vehemently disagrees with what it says. By the way, you were correct. That was a preview that you sent to me. It says here, the first official episode of Weird Things featuring Andrew May and Brian Brushman and Justin Robert Young. So I misremembered all that.
Man. I like this, your version of the future where we're, or the past. We're trying to like exclude you.
Well, no, because we
won't even let yourself into the past.
You definitely sent me something that I was not a part of that I liked a lot and wanted
that
to be part of.
That was a death threat, Brian.
They were like,
you know what else we're
going
to do to you, Schwood?
You better get your act together or this will be the future without you because you're dead. That's
now,
why you're not in this
now,
episode.
By the way, for those listening, imagine that this is because you guys only caught up with a certain part of the story. Me and Andrew record a version of Weird Things sans Brian. Largely to entice Brian to be part of it. Brian comes on, and within a few episodes, he's just being tortured about his children. And it's like, we got you into the tent just so we could torture you.
See, I like to think that that's the only reason you recorded the original one without me is so you could start torturing me. You're like, man, I want to mess with Brian. Let you know we should mess with him. We should record a podcast without him and then send it to him, make him feel bad. And then it's like, you know what? I think Brushwood likes it. I think he wants to be on it. Then we could torture him all the time.
Okay. Now, Brian, though, if you were to actually design a way to torture you, knowing yourself, is there a better, more efficient way than for you to be begging to be on a podcast that is then your living hell?
Yeah. This is pretty much it. All of a sudden I'm realizing I'm having this this massive M. Night Shyamalan ending moment, like,
Well, Brian, I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, really?
How's the old ball and chain there? How's
my
Bonnie doing?
My wife. Yeah. Did you really just call my buddy? All right. my wife is doing fantastic. You know, she's in her third trimester now.
I hope she gets a good grade.
Do you ever just look at her and go, and down the stretch they come?
Well, and what's funny is, man, she's way pregnant. And it's like you look and you're like, you can't get like 3 months bigger. Like, because your belly looks full. It looks like all the way full. But then like a baby's going to get much bigger inside. It's really crazy.
Do you like go grab the ultrasound and look at her like a puzzle trying to figure out how the baby's situated in her?
Well, she explained. She's like, you know, you think a baby's kicking or whatever. But it's like if you've never experienced watching a baby kick, like there's a living being in there. And sometimes they stretch. Like you can see like alien style, like a fist kind of push up against it and rubs. See, you're making the face like that. That happens. Like they're in there, they're all like, let me get a little.
I need room. Boom, boom, boom. This uterus is too small. Bounce.
Yes.
Although they're like, doing home improvement inside of there, you know.
On the flip side, like, though,
like,
too.
Like we beat up a lumpy pillow inside of there. Like,
well,
lady.
It's amazing.
So if that's not horrifying enough, Brian, we're going to take it to another level.
Oh, thank goodness, because I thought this was called Normally Slightly Odd Things.
Have you ever noticed maybe just a little bit of a mood switch, just the tiniest little bit of a mood change when she's pregnant?
This sounded like danger territory, things I should
this
not confess
like
to.
This sounds like the most dangerous conversation Brian's ever had, not only on this podcast, but in life.
Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like. Let's do continue.
Would you an affirmative on that? We'll just assume.
Sure. That many
as
changes.
Brian Brushwood's lawyer, I say yes, conditionally.
All right, this is good. I'm gonna go to you on this. All right, keep going. Next question.
All right. And even after the child is born, sometimes
is there still like changes?
Yeah.
Okay. One moment, please, Justin.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. It's cool. Okay. I mean, there's documented evidence. There's stuff like postpartum depression and...
Sure.
Okay.
A lot of hormones kicking around. I think I got your statement.
Okay, all right. Yes. The answer is yes.
All right. Now, you've heard about how when you have twins, how one twin, like even in the womb, there's some sort of competition for resources.
Oh, yeah. Well, isn't that like even before conception, like you've got some sperm whose job it is to penetrate the fortress and other sperm whose job it is to just kick the ass of other sperm. So competition before there's even competition.
And then when you get inside of there, so you get this sort of like, you know, little twins like, ah, it's mine. I'm going to choke your umbilical cord. Ah, cut it out. Whatever. Right.
Yeah, and then
I have a friend. He has a fraternal twin brother, and my friend's got one eye has two kinds of pigments, part green, part brown.
Is your friend a chimera?
That's what it is. So for those of you who are familiar, the chimera is where basically you have DNA from two different organisms. In this case, there was probably a third twin that got absorbed.
Oh, my God. So this is amazing, because you think about conjoined twins. Those are twins that didn't quite split. And they share a certain chunk. Essentially, your friend, this one person, is two separate conjoined twins, fully blended. That's amazing. And in fact, the way I first heard about this was about a woman who was she needed donations from like bone marrow donations. And they tested her three children, and two of her children came back as incompatible. And they're like, these aren't your kids. And she's like, I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure I remember birthing them. And they're like, well, I mean, and then they explain like, you're a chimera and they have DNA that is not the majority of your body's DNA. Isn't that weird?
Jesus.
Want to get weirder, Brian?
Yeah, yes.
You want to get weirder?
By all means.
So researchers doing some research, some analysis, if you will.
Oh, as they are wont to do.
Okay, hold on.
The brains of 59 women are, as we like to call, female autopsy specimens.
I love the fact that female autopsy specimens is synonymous in Andrew Main's mind for chicks.
Yes.
Okay,
future female autopsy specimen.
Grab these veins.
I joined our date today, female future autopsy specimen.
Female specimen, 72.
Only if it's under suspicious conditions or they volunteer to be a research subject.
Sure, okay.
I hope we will enjoy our subsequent 8 hours and 30 minutes, according to the Elon Musk allotted 10-hour.
As I was saying,
the flushing in your cheeks pleases me, as that indicates a likely contingency.
Your pupil dilation implies either attraction or fear.
May I ask a personal question? What is your maximum foot speed?
So, in these female autopsy specimens, as it says in the article,
or chicks.
In 63% of them, when they looked into the brains, they found Y chromosome DNA.
What? That must be a mistake, because you said they were females. And as we know, females have XX chromosomes, not XY.
That's right. Well, they found a Y chromosome inside of there, and all these women had been pregnant.
Oh, wait a minute. I actually know about this. Justin, do you know about this, like when chicks get pregnant, think about the blood, right? Like they got their blood sharing with the blood of the baby's blood, right? So they're putting their DNA into the bloodstream. Like literally they're giving the lifeblood to this kid, but it goes two ways. There are cells of the baby that go inside the mother's body. And get this, Justin, they stay there forever.
And now they're finding they go into the brain.
They fight diseases on behalf of the mother. They're strangers. You got baby DNA, like just tootling around.
Okay, well, first, Brian, I don't know nothing about anyone being pregnant. And I don't care what you say, Cindy. Number two, that's crazy pants.
I don't even know what to say. Although I do remember, I think I heard about this. I can never remember if it's Radiolab or it almost certainly wasn't Freakonomics Radio. So it's got to be Radiolab that I heard this on, or case study of this kind of thing.
I mean, you think about, like, you watch the movie Alien and it's pretty horrifying, but then you think about, like, all right, so we got this stuff called, like, sperm.
Go on.
Theoretically.
goes inside of a woman. We won't get into how.
Right.
Okay. Attacks these eggs. They're just minding their business, you know. Next thing you know, inside the egg, like a virus, the thing starts splitting over and over again.
It's a chain reaction.
Some of that DNA, which came from you, works its way up into the brain of the woman.
Do you buy this theory that most disease is caused because we're not dirty enough? Because, like, the body is out there saying, like, you know, I don't see no parasites, and you're the weirdest looking cell in the room, mister. And then it starts attacking itself.
I don't know if most, but I certainly do think that a lot of some of the things that we talk, you know, like eczema, some allergies and things like that, things that are diseases or conditions that are immune response kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly think that there's growing evidence that as we've, you know, lived in a much more sterile environment, our body, which is normally used to always attacking these things, isn't as prepared. But the trade-off is we have much longer. I sent you that article for Matt Ridley covering the book where he talked about a guy got rid of his eczema by getting hookworm.
Yeah. You know what,
but he decided to go back to the eczema because
You know what it reminds me of is I was driving through – I had a show like in western Nebraska once, and you get way out in western Nebraska and there's nothing upon nothing forever except for Carhenge. I drove past Carhenge. Some crazy artist stacked a bunch of cars looking like Stonehenge, which is pretty rad. But as you go out there, you know, wind erosion is a really big problem because there's a lot of stuff that doesn't live there. You got all these dune hills. So the way they solve it is by throwing hundreds of thousands of old discarded tires on all these dunes to keep the sand from blowing. So on the one hand, kudos on stopping the erosion. On the other hand, nice tires, bro. So it's like, I don't know. Which would you rather have?
Dude, well, number one, I mean, like, if that theory, you know, was, like, just solidly ever proved out, I mean, like, that would just be, wouldn't it be, like, revolutionary in our era? I mean, Brian, I know you deal on an everyday basis with your daughters with food allergies and this kind of like this idea that, I mean, for me, the idea of the food allergies as they are now was completely different. I know from when I went to school, I would say from when you guys went to school, you know, that'd be insane that like we've perfected ourselves to the point we are now, you know, more sick more regularly. That's insane.
Yeah, no, I remember when I learned about food allergies with our daughters and saw the rising numbers, like if you could buy stock in a disease, buy stock in food allergies, because as the world gets cleaner, we're just going to have more of them and more sensitivities.
There's the we'll leave the whole idea of that. You realize if you knock a girl up, you all of a sudden you're putting part of your DNA in her brain, which I'm just saying that alone.
Wait a minute. I didn't even think. I thought about the baby's DNA.
Where'd it come from, Brian? The stork?
Yes. Oh, my God. There's Brian DNA in her.
And by the way, I want to have a few words with Herman Stork.
You go back and watch, you know, the movie or read the book, The Puppet Master by Heinlein. I mean, that's what dudes have been doing. Like, all right, let's have a baby. I'm going to make you part of me, too.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
So wait, that means that every time, if let's say theoretically, I'm inventing two characters completely from Hold Cloth named Brian and Bonnie.
Sure.
That if Bonnie was going crazy, like before, during, or after pregnancy, that'd be because of the elements of Brian surfacing.
That could be
a possibility.
Could be Brian crazy in her.
All right, can I give you one little personal nugget right here? Bonnie's got the nesting, like, bad. Like, I've never seen this house as clean and as organized as it is on this very day right now. It is, on the one hand, it's awesome. On the other hand, little bit Twilight Zone-y up in here. I'm just saying.
That's totally not your DNA.
That's so my DNA is trying to fight against.
When she yells at you and tells you, I hate your face, that's you, Brian.
Yeah, that's pure self-loathing I put into her.
See, what you need to do, Brian,
like, manage to attack you in a really personal way as you would even think that she would think to attack on, too, you know.
Need to make her feel better, Brian, especially if it's you in there, is to make a podcast without her and then send it to her and ask her to be part of it.
Sounds like a good segue to an ad.
This portion of the podcast is brought to you by The Minister of Chance. It's a brilliant sci-fi fantasy series featuring Jennifer Agutter, Paul Darrow, Tasman Gregg, Sylvester McCoy, Paul McGann, and more. Download the entire series for free on iTunes, and a big, fat, hearty thank you goes out to Todd Schlafer for sponsoring Weird Things.
Next time you see Bonnie, just tell, like, you know, I made you.
Sure, that'll go over great.
Totally. Totally.
Actually, I got a question for you. And this is actually related to the last question, and it's something that I would have tried to squeeze in, but we were busy talking about babies and DNA infections and aliens and stuff. But when you think about, because when you're talking about personality and brains and chimeras specifically, and you think about the idea, it's easy to picture kind of two people in the same body, relatively easy, when you picture a chimera, because you have two distinct DNA individuals, right? And there are experiments where there are people who are epileptics, and one of the treatments that they do is they actually sever the connection between the two hemispheres of the brain. And one of the scientific experiments that you would see is if somebody is blindfolded, you could put something in their right hand, and I forget which one lines up to which. You probably know, Andrew, but you know, one side of the brain handles language, the other side handles symbolic in mathematics and stuff. So you could put something like a wallet in a guy's left or right hand. I forget which one, and he'll be like, I know this, and it's like it's something for money. I don't, and then he switches to the other hand, and because of the separation between the two halves of the brain, he instantly says, oh, it's a wallet. Because the verbal side or whatever. And I've always regarded this as some kind of like crazy other person thing. And then we got to talking about audiobooks, not just on this show, but with a lot of people, because a lot of people like to sit and visually read their audiobook or their physical books. They like to print out their audiobooks in actual text. How crazy is that? And whereas I always love audiobooks because I can do other things, but I've started to notice that I can only do certain types of things while listening to a podcast or doing an audiobook. For example, I can't check my mail because then I've got words. I'm trying to translate words with my eyes while I'm listening to words with my ears, and it all gets jumbled, and I only follow one or the other. There are certain video games I can play. Some of them I can always play. For example, there's a game called Drop 7 that's played entirely with colors and numbers, and it's just a matter of lining stuff up and predicting how they'll interact and fall together. And I can I used to not be able to play Civilization Revolution because you had to read what the characters said. But once I had played it so much that I knew what everything meant, I'm like, oh, Gandhi, you know, get democracy, fight them with gunpowder, do this thing. And it stopped being words, but instead it was just like chess. I was moving symbols. Then I could listen to audiobooks while playing that game. And I started to realize that experience that I'm having, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that two separate parts of my brain, two separate people handling different, two separate versions of myself handling different aspects? Because in some of these split brain patients, they do things like they'll flash images to the left eye and check for eye dilation, and then they'll flash images to the right eye and check for eye dilation, and they'll notice that the eyes like different things. The different halves of the brain, one reacts to women and boobs and fast cars, and the other one reacts to money or some other thing.
In your case, Brian, you probably had an undiagnosed stroke. what you're experiencing more has to do with that. When we always got to be careful. We talk about centers of the brains or modules and stuff. Sometimes people take them to be too literal, and there are areas that control stuff. But you have a part of your brain that processes language,
right?
And you know, we've talked about this before. Feral children who are raised in the wild and don't get language before probably like 7 or 8. Are never going to pick up language at some point. They're never going to be able to pick it up because they don't develop that part of the brain. And so when your language part of your brain, it's a decoder.
Now, is that like I remember hearing – you're talking about the critical period. And mm-hmm. I know I thought I remember hearing like that's not as – it's not untrue, but it's not as true as they thought in the 70s and 80s or something like that. Do you remember hearing something like that?
There, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they found ways to sort of – train other parts or whatever, but I'm not, you know, the stuff that I read on it, it seems to be pretty like past a certain point. It's hard, and there's so few examples to look at it, but we know that it's really, really, really hard.
Okay.
And albeit almost impossible, given what we've known before, to try to teach them. But the point is, you have this sort of language part of your brain, which decodes, figures things out, handles speech, etc. I can't, if I'm writing, if I start writing and I'm listening to soundtracks with no lyrics, and I get into writing, then all of a sudden, if at some point you slip into some lyrics, I probably won't notice and I'll be fine. If I start off writing and there are lyrics, it's going to interfere with my writing. I'm so bad. If I'm on the phone with you and I'm talking to you and I have a pen in my hand, I will write down what I'm saying.
Yes. Yes. Sure. Now, what's funny is, like, I can handle songs with lyrics as long as I am totally unfamiliar with the song and don't know it at all. But, but when a song comes on that I recognize, especially as you get to the chorus or the part that you definitely know the words to, all of a sudden I can't type anymore, which is why I got to listen to, like, crazy techno or whatever.
Oh, see, I'm the exact opposite. Like, I will key on, like, new data. Like, even if it's something that's stupid or repetitive, I can't. Number one, lyrics are right out for me. In general, which is why I started, like, I got into bands like Explosions in the Sky and stuff like that, which are all completely instrumental, just because, like, that was something that I could work to, where I certainly couldn't. Now, meanwhile, like, I noticed a trend with my friends, like, in, like, the newspaper I used to work at. The writers, some writers could write with lyrics, some, like me, could not. And designers, I found almost uniformly, all could work with songs with lyrics, because it seemed like
when I do Photoshop, I can listen to any kind of music, lyrics, whatever. It's when I have to do anything that's relating to verbal. It's like I'm writing, when I write a book and I sit down to sort of just bunker down in there, I'll get a ton of soundtracks, but I will go out of, if all of a sudden something comes in and it's got some lyrics, I have to take that out of the soundtrack feed because it'll pull me out of the writing and, you know, I'll lose focus.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So why do you think that is?
I mean, we have a part of our brain, you know, we have systems that handle visual information. We've got, as primates, we have the most highly developed language center of any organism there is, but it's a finite number of neurons that process language. And part of what we do, part of the gift we have, we're pattern seekers. And so we're very good at picking up in a noisy environment little words, you know. And that means, though, that we're always hypersensitive to these words, and it's always running trying to pick these things up. And as we're trying to focus on other tasks and form sentences or think about things, our brain goes, oh, I just heard this word. Oh, yeah, I just heard that. Some people can shut that off. Some people can compartmentalize. You know, Isaac Asimov supposedly was able to type and write while he had a conversation with you on the phone.
Sure. Well, no. And specifically, wasn't that one of the stories about James Randi that he calls?
Yeah, Randi, when I did the Amazing Show podcast, which is still out there, he talked about, like, he would be on the phone having a conversation and not like a distracted conversation, not like a, yup, uh-huh, cool, great, yeah, great, like an actual engaged conversation, and he would hear what would sound like if you listened to, like, news radio with, like the ticker, you know, in the background, like, and it would be Asimov writing another Foundation story while he's just, like, horsing around with you on the phone.
See, and it's like some part of me wants to marvel at that, but don't we all juggle multiple things at the same time? I guess it's just that's double impressive.
Not like
because,
that.
Well, no. But I mean, like you have had sensible conversations with me while you're operating a motor vehicle, right? Which is a hugely complex task involving processing all this visual equipment, you know, running different pieces, steering, acceleration, transmission, shifting gears and all this stuff. And yet you're able to do it while talking and thinking about an ex-girlfriend and having an argument about whatever.
Not using the verbal part of the brain, though.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying, is that's the only reason that it's exceptional, is because he's doing two things that use the same modality.
He's having two streams of thought at the same time, conscious, like, verbal thought. Now, you ever do this where you're looking for someplace and you're by yourself and you turn down the radio? You're in a car trying to find a
address? Yes. I do that all the time.
Oh, yeah. You need to make the distraction go away?
Yeah, and all it is an auditory distraction, and you're looking for visual information, but you're like, I'm going to turn down the radio to look for the house number or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a weird thing. I mean, it's just one of those things. You think about it, like, makes no sense on the surface, but you think about just we've got finite amount of neurons that can focus on that.
Man, it just makes me wonder. To be honest, like, one of the times I'm happiest, and part of it is because I have so many responsibilities as you know – as you guys know, running your own businesses and doing and traveling and doing all these other
father
things.
Father of two children, another one on the way.
Yeah. Well, and then on top of that, right, you got the pressure
Cindy.
Doing that. But it's like there's these brief moments. There's these brief moments that it seems like when I'm happy in it, happiest is when it's simply not possible for me to be doing anything except for what I'm doing. So that's why, like, when I'm on stage, it's great. When I'm playing with the kids, that's great. Because, you know, I'm not supposed to be doing anything but that thing mm-hmm. at that moment. And I think lately, because when I'll go to the gym, I'll work out on the elliptical machine. I'll listen to an audiobook or podcast. And I will play Civilization Revolution. And I'll love it because I'm doing three fundamental – my body's physically working out, so I'm improving my body. And I've got two halves of my mind working on different things. One, you know, listening lost in the story verbally, and the other one moving these symbols around in order to conquer the world. And there's something so stimulating about that multi-threaded experience that I don't know. I never noticed that before, that there could be so much joy in getting a second layer of input at the same time.
Brian likes a second form of input.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, you know, I would say, like, I think part of it is also just sort of putting yourself in a, you know, in a happy sort of state that just, like, passes that time where you're achieving things, you know, but yet you're stimulated on that other level, you know?
Yeah, and I wonder if that's why books just by themselves don't do it for me so much anymore, because even when I'm sitting there reading, I mean, number one, it's tough to carve out, you know, an hour straight to ignore the world and just read, look at pages. But number two, it's like, I wonder if I'm just kind of spoiled on, like, I want to be doing other stuff while I'm experiencing the book.
I would always, I mean, like, because I was terrible at keeping up with, like, school books when I was in school. Like, I would never really do required reading because I found it easier to just BS my way through things. And then I didn't do a lot of reading for pleasure, like, you know, of just like reading other books, because I would feel guilty about the fact that I hadn't done the school reading. So I would always kind of feel like somebody, like, I would be reading something else, and in my head it would be like, well, you should be reading the other stuff. Why aren't you reading the other stuff? Boy, you're such a lazy idiot. You can't read the other stuff. Now you're reading this? This is what
put
you're reading?
Put that Hunter S. Thompson down.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
I would, you know, and that kind of transferred through, I mean, to my adult life before I really found audiobooks, and audiobooks were just like, well, I can do other stuff, but they ain't nothing stopping me.
Yeah. I hope you don't mind when I interject with a question like that, because I know you,
Brian, I mind terribly, and it needs to come to. I think it's great. No, absolutely. I was even going to suggest earlier, but now you guys are busy. Like, if you each wanted to pick a topic or something, but I didn't want to make it look like I was lazy.
No. Okay, well, good. Well, I always assume you got something, but it's good to know that you don't mind.
It's you guys are part of the show in a small way.
You guys are like engines 6 and 7, man. Like, great that they're there. I sure hope lightning doesn't strike any of the engines, but, you know, we'll still get there.
A gremlin on the wing.
That's right. Man, that scared the crap out of me back in the day. Loved it.
John, that was the worst flight you ever had. Remember when you called me on it? There's something on the wing.
Oh, see, I always think of John Lithgow on that instead of the William Shatner.
After you see the Shatner, it's hard to – Lithgow did great, but, I mean, just the Shatner delivery.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've seen – when I was a kid, I watched Lithgow do that scene maybe 20 to 40 times on cable television. You know, because it was at the end of Twilight Zone movie, and you guys remember the rule. If you were shifting around channel surfing, and I'm doing this because – you used to have to actually twist the handle on it.
You had to twist the cow's udder to get the channel.
Right, exactly. But then, like, the moment you saw a movie you like, you left it there. So as a result, you saw the endings of movies, like, 20 times more than you saw the beginnings of a movie, because you would always catch it halfway in the middle. And with that one being at the end of Twilight Zone, the movie, like, the part that always got me that was so, like to me, it blew my mind because it opened up this whole other aspect, was when they finally cracks open, you know, shoots open the window to show everyone the gremlin on the wing. And the gremlin jumps in, puts his hand on his face, and then just goes, you know, waggling his finger, and then just flies off into the night. Something about the idea, like, you think this thing's an animal, but in that brief moment that it puts his hand on him and waggles his finger, all of a sudden you think intelligence. And there was something about that just chilled me, because it made me rethink everything I thought I knew about this creature on the wing.
You looked it up in Wikipedia, which is really awkward because your Commodore 64 didn't even have an internet connection.
Yeah. I typed in go 210.
Yes. So the Mars Curiosity rover.
Never heard of it.
Well, it's on Mars. Ah. It's very curious.
Mars? The guy? Good old God of War?
Yes, that Mars. Friend of Thor. Mars Curiosity rover discovered this week more evidence of moving water on Mars, and not for just a short period of time, because we find geological evidence. It looks like there's waters flowed on Mars. The problem was it just like this sort of fluke, sort of short period of time this happened, but the Curiosity rover actually went right up to a stream bed and saw what you would see if you went to a stream bed in the other parts of Earth, with the different pebble-shaped rocks that show large amounts of erosion for considerable amounts of period of time, further proving the idea that there was liquid water on Mars for probably millions of years, if not longer.
See, this is what's so difficult about science, is that when you extract a headline from stuff, it can be very confusing to idiots like me and Justin, because I remember seeing a headline like 3 weeks ago saying, new evidence suggests not nearly as much water on Mars as we hoped. And then the newest evidence is like, definitely, definitely there's water on Mars. And it's like, it's hard to know what to get excited about.
I think that it depends upon what you want to get excited about. And in particular here, if you're hoping that we may eventually start finding evidence of life, which we may or may not, but if you want to find evidence of life, then as we would most readily recognize it, you probably need to have flowing water.
Well, so that's one of the things. Like, aren't they worried about finding life or microbes on Mars because we're pretty sure we sent possibly contaminated parts up in the Curiosity rover?
Yeah, it's highly likely. But also, Earth has been pelting Mars with meteor. We talk about the Martian meteors with potential life, but Earth has been pelting Mars for years with meteors. And we now know that Earth rock or rocks from our planet could contain viable life that could survive that long, which 10 years ago was a crazy idea. Now it's possible, and given enough rocks, could happen.
Now it's science fact.
Remember the book and the movie The Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton?
Sure.
That was based upon his fear that the lunar processing facility, where we were going to be taking in all these lunar samples and examining them, wasn't going to be clean enough or enough isolation there to protect us from bringing something back that's been in space and mutated or whatever and wreaking havoc on Earth.
Yeah. I mean, so what exactly is the question then?
Question. More of an observation, if you will.
No, I'll tell you what, since we're talking about water on Mars, I'm sure you guys saw the news today. Brand new news. You know who's got weather besides Earth? Because I'll tell you what.
Mars?
Venus ain't got no weather. It's always hot. That's all you're ever going to be. Hot and acidy is all they got. Mars, I guess there's weather in that it's colder than usual.
Yeah, well, like Venus may actually get snow in the upper reaches of the atmosphere.
Yeah. Wait, Venus? Really? Mm-hmm. Gets snow?
In the upper reaches of the atmosphere, right, yeah.
I guess this is what I mean. Less weather and more seasons.
Mars has seasons.
All right. Guess who else has seasons?
Who's got seasons, Bri?
Canada.
No. Actually, I want to see if – I'm sure Andrew will get it in like one more guess. Who else has seasons?
I mean, what do we mean by seasons? So, okay.
All right. Detailed observations of
– the four seasons. Motown's greatest hitmakers.
This person in France has analyzed data gathered over this time and has found that the changing seasons of this place affect it more than previously thought. These were presented at the European Planetary Science Congress on Friday, the 28th of September. As with Earth, conditions on this body change with its seasons, says Kustenis.
I mean, if we throw out all the big gassy giants, because
they're so gassy.
Yeah. I mean,
always
like,
burping.
I would go, if you start
gas
going,
isn't
like,
a season.
Europa?
No, it's not Europa.
Io?
No, it's not Io.
Ganymede?
No, it's not Ganymede.
Is it Ganon from Zelda?
No, it's not Ganon from Zelda.
Vulcan.
No, it's not Vulcan.
Rich Ganon, former NFL quarterback.
Okay, you want to hear some more? Let's see.
Does it involve Rich Ganon?
No, it doesn't. We can see differences in atmospheric temperatures, chemical composition, and circulation patterns, especially at the poles. And there's a specific example that would give it away here. This is all very surprising because we didn't expect to find any such rapid changes, especially in the deeper layers of the atmosphere.
Well, I'm trying to think, like, atmosphere, like, even the moon has an atmosphere, but if we're going to talk about seasons and how radical we'd have to be to call it
the
a season.
The main cause of these cycles is solar radiation. This is the dominant energy source for this body's atmosphere, breaking up the nitrogen and methane present to create more complex molecules, such as ethane, acting as the driving force for chemical changes. This body is inclined at around 27 degrees, similar to the Earth. Meaning
like Neptune has like a really strange occlusion.
No, it's not Neptune.
Uranus?
No, it's not Uranus.
Is it the moon?
No, it's not the moon.
Is it the moon from the movie Moon?
No, it's not the moon from the movie Moon. Meaning that the cause of seasons, sunlight reaching different areas with varying intensity due to the tilt, is the same for both worlds.
Got it. It's the song Bad Moon Rising.
All right, quote, Bride, go ahead.
It's amazing to think that the sun still dominates over other energy sources, even as far out as Titan, over 1.5 billion kilometers from us, explains Kustens. To draw these conclusions, data was analyzed from several different missions, including Voyager, the Infrared Space Observatory, and Cassini, complemented by ground-based observations. Each season on Titan, of course, being the moon around Saturn. Spans around 7.5 years, while it takes 29.5 years for Saturn to orbit the sun. So data has now been gathered for an entire Titan year, encapsulating all seasons. So
I'm gonna call this segment "Remember the Titans."
That should be the name of the episode. But it's like Titan is so exciting because they actually have, you know, rainfall patterns of methane on the by the way, I said methane earlier because I pictured these were British people. I don't know if they are. I think they were presenting in France is why I thought that. But they actually have, you know, evaporations, condensation, and well, and
here's my question is, are we going to find – I would think that we're going to eventually find out that every single body in the solar system has seasons.
And it's the time of the season?
I mean, just,
well,
just
it would
because –
just be what will we – how we can, you know, observe them and the instruments we can use to understand what they do, right? Like,
well, we're just realizing on Earth, and we tend to think about like, oh, we have our four seasons on Earth, but then when you kind of, and we base that upon doing a 365 day orbit, and we say if you divide that period of time up into there, look at these seasons we have, and you look at, you know, the precession of the equinox and how the Earth rotates on there, but when you start to look at data in a much larger set, you see other patterns that come in through there. We have glacial periods. We're in an interglacial period right now. We're still technically in an ice age. And you look at these, you know, the Earth has been much, much warmer than it is now. And you look at these, or some points it's snowball or sometimes it's not. And you see these periods, which if you just got rid of the bias of that 365-day sort of period or just based in a season on the, you know, how the wobble of the Earth, and you look at these other temperature changes and stuff, you would describe there are other things that we would call seasons.
Yeah, well, and absolutely. I mean, and you are correct.
I mean, it's fascinating about Titan. Absolutely.
I hear what you're doing is you're definitely establishing a parallel thing to be excited and find wonder in. But I'm really struck by the fact that that, you know, two bodies having the same tilt, both having precipitation and changing patterns.
And what's exciting about that, Brian, too, is that when we start looking at these extrasolar systems and we find these large gas giants and we start wondering, are we going to find Earth-sized worlds or other places that could inhabit, that could have life? One of the things we've always said, well, it might be harder on a planet that's a moon of a larger thing because it may not have the same kind of seasons we have. It may not have the same sort of tide. You know, we talk about how our moon is an extremely large body compared to the size of the Earth. No other place in the solar system do you find two bodies that close in size. And, you know, if our moon was somewhere else in our solar system, you know, we would have initially probably thought it a planet.
Sure.
Now, when you look at that, people go, well, maybe that was why we have life on Earth, because our moons were able to create tides and the tidal forces, a lot of life comes up at the fringes. And what you said about, you know, Titan and the idea of having these seasons there, and there's going to be tidal forces because of the effect Saturn's going to have on it. But it's going to be very interesting, because it means that these are complex dynamic systems that who knows what's going on there.
Yeah.
So I'm all for it.
Yes, I'm not against it. That's for sure.
I am against it. Down with Titan.
Forget
so,
that Titan.
Speaking of space, where are you guys going to be Sunday?
Well, okay. So here's the deal. We got a little bit of a special event, right?
This is by the way, it's already been leaked. Big Daddy L has already mentioned it on the live stream, so I went ahead and spilled the beans earlier today. But for anyone listening just to Weird Things, what's about the coolest cross-promotional special event that would bring together three things?
Well, let's talk about what the event is, and then we'll talk about where they can find it.
Television show.
Okay. What's second best thing?
Well, let's talk about what we're doing. What are we doing on Sunday? Andrew, you got a really interesting package in the mail, and it wasn't a paternity suit from Cindy. It was instead a letter from who?
Well, I got an email. That's how we do it now.
You got a telegram saying, attention all hands, stop. Good news, stop.
You've come been to selected. See the rocket, stop. Oh, okay.
Well,
I applied for, you know, I was already going to go up to go watch the SpaceX NASA launch where they're doing the first official mission. The one we talked before, that was the test mission. That was like, see if they could do it. And now this is the first official mission. This is America, NASA contracting a company to say, hey, we need you guys to deliver some pudding to the space station.
Now, what did
this you see? Time there's granola.
What happened last time? Did they actually send anything up before or
non-essential cargo? They loaded up with some stuff, but it was like nothing like important.
So,
or anything.
So again, it was
it
just
was like old sweaters. It was like it's like the New York or the New England Patriots perfect season sweaters when they lost
their
the
NASA was cleaning out a closet, had some coffee mugs and some other things.
This is like when you've got that new kid in the mailroom who's got lots of gumption and he's like, you know, what can I do for you, boss? You're like, give this to Larry on 3rd Street. He really needs it. It's priority one. And it's like an old Penthouse magazine. You just want to know if he actually can get the cargo there on time. Now it's like, okay, seriously, no, this has to go to Larry on 3rd Street.
They're all just things from the NASA novelty store, like a t-shirt that says Mars keeps it wet.
All that freeze-dried ice cream.
Some fake vomit.
So this Sunday, they're doing the launch. This is the first of the cargo mission. Now, this is SpaceX doing this. Orbital Sciences will be doing a launch as well at some point. And very exciting moment. We retired the space shuttle officially. Now we've got two viable private companies that are able to support the International Space Station, and the module we'll be watching going up there as part of routine. Now it's routine. Now it's like, it's the old SpaceX flight, the old SpaceX 1205 going up to the ISS.
Yeah.
So I was already committed to going there, and then NASA Social, you can follow NASA Social at NASA Social on Twitter, has a program where they let, you know, people on online media who do podcasts and blogs and that other new thing we can't tell you about that they're really excited about in Silicon Valley that all the really cool people are doing. But anyhow, I made that up, Ryan. Don't worry. You'll get
feeling,
on that.
Feeling on the outside. Go ahead. Keep going,
yeah,
sir.
Just say there's an extra key on your keyboard there, and that symbol will explain everything. So anyhow,
Brian's relative excitement for the thing he doesn't know about is completely determined on whether or not he's on the recommended list.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, and whether or not this, it turns out the new thing is like whatever it is, it's like a TV show that you're going to record without me just to send me a copy and make me want to be a part of it. And then it only gets called Physically Torture Brian Brushwood.
But it's only going to be in Japan. So anyhow, I applied. I said I do a podcast that people listen to with two other guys who aren't important, and mentioned that we'd actually live stream the last one, and they accepted. They said yes. Now I just got to get through the security things because I may have used, you know, an alias when I applied. But anyhow,
Isaac
so
Asimov. Well, I'll tell you, that's two things that our audience absolutely loves, SpaceX and weird things. And I can't imagine there could possibly be a third element to make anything more electric or special for this event.
Well,
go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, I say, so yeah, I thought that'd be pretty fun. So now I found out we can stream from the press area, bring everybody super, super close to the action.
Oh,
make
man.
Sure if first, we like, had... well, our Wi-Fi is kind of spotty. I'm like, hey, NASA, you need to look into that.
Exactly.
What a bummer.
Well,
because
and that's like, you know, for everybody who watched when me and Andrew went up, we did I think it's one of my favorite Weird Things podcasts ever, just because it was so kind of raw and electric. And to this day, it's the podcast that I think I've gotten the most feedback on that people have talked about and singled out as loving. But when me and Andrew went up and watched SpaceX, and we have at the end just the audio of, you can hear in the background the engines firing and us just kind of geeking out like monkeys. But now so much closer, a better shot.
I'll be able to run underneath the boosters, the rockets. I'll be underneath there.
You'll be able to commit suicide in the most spectacular way possible.
But I'll tell you what. You think that was a really cool episode. People really, really loved that. A couple weeks ago, when the Mars Curiosity landed, Twit did a very big special with Tom Merritt and John Strickland and myself
yourself,
and Brian
yeah.
and Dr. Kiki and Phil Plait. So we figured, what do you know? Why don't we sew those two things together? So... I think what we're going to do is this Sunday, and it will, I don't know what the lead time is going to be, but I assume somewhere around 45 minutes to an hour or something like that before
Sure. Watch
time, we'll all get on. Me, Brian, Andrew, Tom Merritt, simulcast on live.twit.tv. So we'll have a in studio presence. Andrew will be out there on the field, shooting video, and it's going to be a great time. I think it's the best of both worlds,
yeah,
and we're going to have
I'll
a blast.
I'll tell you what. Here's the thing that makes me the happiest is just minutes ago, after we started this recording, Tom Merritt sent me an update on making that happen. We were talking about flying out a live view, but it doesn't look like that's happening.
And well, we need it. I mean, I've got LTE,
sure.
We've got
yeah.
an HD iPhone.
But
we'll be fine.
My favorite thing is that Tom says that we got the feed and we got a TD. I guess that's what, technical director. And then,
I like to call it Chad.
Yeah, well, that's what he said. He said that Chad and Jammer B are fighting a knockdown, drag-out war to be the TD. Like, that's how exciting and electric this is that they want to be there and part of it. It's gonna be amazing. I'm so excited for this.
I think what the thing to be excited about this, and the fallback day is Monday, by the way, so I'll go up there again on Monday if it doesn't go off Sunday. So we'll be able to do, at least on the Weird Things, cover it.
Either way, yeah, absolutely.
The reason to be excited about this is there's your first flight when the Wright brothers, you know, make the airplane take off. Then there's when you get into the actual commercial flights, when all of a sudden it becomes a business, a reliable thing that you count on, space as an API, as we talk about, this booked. This is a, let's book this SpaceX Dragon launch. Yeah, now when it's a business that government relies upon, that they've met enough reliability, they're excited about that. SpaceX wants to put astronauts on this same rocket after they've done enough missions by the time they put astronauts onto a Falcon, it will be the most heavily tested rocket system in the history of space travel. And this is part of that. But this is a business. Now this is a regular, we're depending on it. It's a mission critical business to support the International Space Station. That's an exciting point to see this. Every little step is interesting.
Well, and it's just so cool because, and listen, we've talked about, you know, private space travel more than I think we've talked about any other single subject on this podcast. But it's just exciting to me because it gets NASA back to doing what NASA has always done best, which is let's look at what we want to explore. And let's not worry about, politicians with everything that goes along with federal funding, you know, getting in the way of what's important, which is science.
Absolutely.
So do we want to go picks or one more topic?
Yeah, let's go picks. We're already past an hour.
All right. It's hard to know with all the interruptions.
What? Don't look at me. Look at Time Warner.
I'm looking at Time Warner.
Yeah, I'm looking at you, Time Warner.
Let's start off with picks. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I actually have a couple for you.
Justin, why don't you go first?
Go ahead, Brian.
First of all, you may have remember last week I mentioned I was listening to The Long Earth, Terry Pratchett, and I want to say Stephen Baxter. I don't think that's right, though.
I think that's right.
But I love the idea of being able to step either east or west to alternate versions of Earth. First, relatively close. You got, it's pretty much the same thing, just undeveloped on each side. But the farther out you go, you hit a band of Earths that's all in the middle of an ice age. You keep on going. You hit a band of Earths with maybe a couple of them with some kind of like runaway heat wave or whatever, where you eventually run into an Earth that's totally covered in water. You go far enough, you find yourself maybe, just maybe, where an Earth should be, but instead got demolished by the moon or something bigger or whatever, and you keep on going. Really, really enjoyed the ideas behind the book. And there was a time when I thought, man, the last time I felt this way about a book was when it was Peter F. Hamilton. I mean, this is feeling really smart and crazy and out there. And then the book just didn't end. Just didn't end at all. Just like, like it was almost as though mid-paragraph something says, we hope you enjoyed this audio presentation of The Long Earth. It's like it clearly everything felt like set up and didn't go anywhere. I don't want to crap on it because who knows? For all we know, maybe the second book will be where the real meat happens and that it'll have been worth it. Love the idea. Hated the last 20% of the book because it didn't do anything.
It's like they sold it on a premise.
Well, and wrote it on a premise, and it was good. It was great. There was a lot that I really liked and is going to stick with me for a very long time. Super, super bummed about it. I got a second thing for you. This is a short video that I want you to watch. It's only 10 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube. It's called Tears of Steel, and it's a weird, weird story. It was put together by the Blender Foundation. Blender is an open source 3D development platform. And what they do is to help stimulate interest in the platform, they put together these crowdsourced 3D movies, all developed on the Blender platform. They're crowdfunded and totally open sourced in that you could get a hold of all of the assets, if I'm given to understand it. It's all Creative Commons 3.0 attribution license. And the quality, the quality of the acting is a little bit off, but it is a delightfully bizarre story, the likes of which I would never have thought up. And of course, because they're showcasing the capabilities of this software, the special effects are much more what you would expect from a giant Hollywood blockbuster than you would expect from a short, free, 10-minute long vignette. And it's I don't want to spoil anything by saying what the actual plot of the story is, but on top of everything, it had a very unusual story, the kind of thing you would see in a golden or silver age science fiction short stories from the likes of an Isaac Asimov.
Very cool. They did, I remember a couple years ago, they did Buck Bunny, which felt like a very much a Pixar kind of short. And then it had this very kind of European comedy kind of come into it.
Right on.
Yeah, there's a moment at the end that me and Andrew got endless amounts of laughter
from Buck Bunny.
Yeah.
There's a horrifying image.
Yeah, Blender is, if you guys think it's blender.org, if you want to get into computer animation, game design, whatever, they've got a lot of great tools. There's a lot of books out there that makes it, anybody who wants to spend the time to do it, and you can do just amazing Hollywood quality effects with that. And the short, Brian's talked about, I've not watched it, but I look forward to seeing it because it just shows you, what's accessible now. You don't need it'd be nice to have a render farm because it'll take forever to process this stuff, but
sure.
You got time on your hands. The tools are free.
Yeah, I'm going to limit myself just to those two. A half recommendation or a recommendation with caveat and a wholehearted recommendation to check out Tears of Steel.
My pick, and this is a movie that I very much enjoyed. Mileage may vary for other people, and so I do want to put it with that caveat, and that is The Master by Paul Thomas Anderson, starring Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix, which, although Paul Thomas Anderson has said nothing about it being based upon the life of L. Ron Hubbard, other people have pointed out a tremendous amount of similarities between the main character and his movement called the Cause and his system of processing people.
Oh, dude, I almost wish I'm not hearing any of this because I didn't know anything about it. I was going to go see it not knowing anything. And it's like now I feel bad that I even know this much.
You're kidding me, right?
No, I have kept myself pure. I have not known a thing. Remember how I was shocked that you wouldn't watch that trailer for Looper and I thought you were crazy? That's because you were like, Rian Johnson told me not to watch it, so I'm not going to watch it. Like, I trust Paul Thomas Anderson. I didn't want to know anything about it going in.
Well, that wasn't the – I mean, that's not a secret about it at all.
It wasn't a secret when I showed the Looper trailer either.
That Rian Johnson said, don't watch this trailer, reveals too much?
I'm just saying. Hey, bro.
I'm shocked that you were able to not know that just incidentally, bro. I mean, like, it's been referred to as the Scientology movie forever.
I was shocked that Jeff Cannata hadn't seen a trailer for Inception, and I felt really guilty when I tricked him into watching the first half of it. But that's okay.
So moving right along, so the movie is Justin's reference that everybody talks about as the movie that's the L. Ron Hubbard-like movie.
Right, sure.
Which is not a plot secret. But anyhow, Star Wars, a lot of space stuff in it. Not going to lie. I really enjoyed it, but it's a movie that you will see people get up and walk out of because of the pacing. It is – some people – kind of said it's like a Terrence Malick film with he's the guy that did Tree of Life, I think last year, which some of those movies, the pacing for me is just, I'm just not into it, but I really loved the character study. It's one of those things that afterwards for people who like it, you can have a very interesting discussion about the kinds of personalities that are involved in it. And it's not a biopic in any sense. It's about people who deal with, I'll say chaos in different ways. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Absolutely enjoyed it. But part of the audience walked out and are like, I don't get it. Other people just absolutely loved it because fantastic acting. The acting alone in it is amazing. And the way it is my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie by far.
Wow.
Now, let me ask you this, because we talked about this a little bit last night.
His last movie was There Will Be Blood. So if you understand that kind of genre.
Right. I still haven't seen There Will Be Blood, and I feel terrible about it.
You should. Yeah. You're a horrible human being.
No, that's good. I mean, Day-Lewis is just, he's a monster. We talked about this a little bit last night after you got out of the movie, Andrew, but I wanted to ask you, especially on the podcast, if you think you enjoyed The Master and specifically the character study because you spent, or you appreciated it more because of the time you spent with the JREF and some of the work that they had, you know, dealt with in coming in contact with some of these cult of personality people.
Well, and even before then, I've always been interested in fringe religions and belief and why people get into things. You know, for instance, motivational speakers are very weird people. They're very people who have this idea about who they want to be and then create a business about trying to sell this to other people. But you look at most motivational speakers and you break down who they are as people, and there's a lot of dysfunction there. And that's always fascinated me, that idea, like, why do cults start? Why do people create these things? And knowing a lot about the history of different organizations, EST, Scientology, other sort of movements, and particularly about, you know, the life of L. Ron Hubbard, it was very interesting to see how much of that was put into this. And again, it's not him, but it's a guy very much like him. And I appreciated a lot of things in there because there were a lot of little details in there that I think may have been lost on people who maybe didn't study, you know, into detail. And that's not their fault, you know. I mean, but I think if you're really into this sort of area, I think you'll find it very, very interesting. So,
and if you enjoy following the elements and the machinations of Hollywood, the fact that this movie is as good and the acting performances are as good as they are, this is going to be a very, very rich behind the scenes kind of story to see the Oscar voting machine that is Harvey Weinstein, who put out the movie and consistently gets his movies Oscars by hook or by crook, versus the very, very powerful Hollywood influence of Scientology, which is apparently not particularly happy with the movie or any time that their religion is in any way, either explicitly or representationally put out there, which to many in Hollywood who aren't particularly fans of either cause is like watching, you know, Godzilla fight Mothra. Right. So it will be very, very exciting.
I hope you guys see it because I'd love to talk about it. It could be a last section we could talk about there and some of the things in there. as I know that, you know, you all went out and saw Judge Dredd, because if you didn't, you'd be horrible, horrible human beings.
Did you see it, Justin?
Which segs right into my pick. And I am the Grand Theater here in Oakland is playing it in 70 millimeter, which I'm very, very excited. The Master.
Oh, wow. Dredd.
So I'm very excited to go see that. All right. I took the Dredd Pledge, as I know many of you did. I saw people tweet me tickets, ticket stub pictures all week, and I'm very, very excited that you guys did. I followed up on it at the 11th hour last night because I didn't want to be a schmuck who showed up on the show after talking about supporting good science fiction and not watching it. And boy, did I love it. Listen, it is – I love movies that know exactly – what they are, and I saw two great examples of that. One, an extraordinarily, you know, ambitious movie. Both are ambitious, and I don't want to say that Dredd is anything less than ambitious, because it certainly is. But Looper and Dredd are two very, very different movies. I enjoyed them both very thoroughly. But to speak to Dredd, you know, it's so dead ahead, awesome science fiction action for adults. It's violent where it needs to be. It's gorgeous where it needs to be. All the performances are very, very engrossing, but not in a chew the scenery or I'm going to try to make myself the focus of things. The world itself, Mega City One, just kind of bleeds through the screen. And if it's one of those things where if there's an element, and even in movies like Avengers, where I liked Avengers, but it's kind of hard for me to swallow Scarlett Johansson as a kung fu expert and like the best special ops agent in the history of the planet. Like this is even does stuff like that. Like there's the female tag along and there's every element of that is played right from her introduction to how she reacts in the movie. And the one sideline I will say to everybody is if you are a fan of The Wire, Avon Barksdale is a major part of this movie playing a drug dealer, and it is awesome to watch.
No spoilers.
Okay, sorry. Avon Barksdale plays a drug dealer, and it's awesome to watch it as like an amazing crossover fanfic of like what happens
if The Wire met Judge Dredd.
Exactly. That like in Baltimore they decide to we leave Avon in whatever situation we leave Avon in, he is cryogenically frozen and then reawakened in Mega City One
where he finally turns to his crime roots. The bureaucracy of Baltimore has been dealt with by way of the judges.
Exactly. Which they never say where in Mega City One, cuz Mega City One stretches from Boston to DC. So Baltimore is in the area of Mega City One. But listen, absolutely fantastic. And if I can just say, I can't believe that we haven't mentioned it, but I think we all saw it. Looper, I mean, just awesome, right? I said after Brothers Bloom that for me, I mean, in my hierarchy of directors, I'm a big fan of Wes Anderson. Wes Anderson had done two kind of middling pictures, and Rian Johnson had done two pictures that I really, really, really enjoyed. And I'm like, tell you what, he's got this Looper movie next. He might move up my list of all-time favorite directors. And even after another great, where Wes Anderson kind of rebounded to form, in my opinion, this was awesome. This is not only a good science fiction movie, I think it's an important science fiction movie. He's an important director. And it's just great. From execution to ideas to acting. I'll tell you what, it looks like it's just a great time to go to the movies, man. Go to the movies, because you're going to see something good.
Gentlemen, I think there's some good recommendations we have out there for everybody. I don't know more we can add to that. Pay attention to the Twitter for Weird Things Com, and you will find out when we do our Sunday. Hopefully everything will work out on that. We'll be able to do our cover the SpaceX launch and talk about other stuff too, but just heavy, heavy space stuff. See who else we might be able to rope into that. And until next time, it's been weird.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.